listening to highlights from the Creative Processes interview with novelist, journalist, and art critic Katie Kitamura. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
There's a lot of restraint and ambiguity. And with addition, there's multiple interpretations. Your earlier life or training as a ballet dancer made me think of how in classical ballet, dancers can often learn multiple roles within a production. And really amazing to me when I was told this, you probably have more direct experience of it. A dancer might perform a lead role one day, maybe a supporting role, maybe even a mirror, have to dance on the opposite side of a formation on another performance. And I thought, what a fluid sense of identity and what is true and what your sense of self is. So I wonder, did this kind of open your mind to multiple interpretations? You know, how do you sense that as you're working your way through a character as you were writing audition?
Your question about dancing is so interesting because I never thought about it. But I think the narrative structure of those story ballets, which were some of the biggest stories of my childhood, I grew up watching Swan Lake, Giselle, La Bayadere. These were stories that were as present to me as anything that I read. Those story ballets are often split in two parts in a way. You have the white swan and the black swan. In Giselle, you have the young girl, and then you have the shade, the kind of ghost who comes to haunt her lover. Very similar in La Bayadere. And the structure of this novel is in two parts, and it's two versions in a way of the same character. And now that you said it, I wonder if in some way, without realizing it, that narrative structure had really seeped into my brain. I often find that a lot of my influences do come from my early childhood reading and kind of cultural intake. I read Agatha Christie novels almost compulsively as a child, and although I don't write mysteries in the conventional sense, I think the mystery genre is very much present in a lot of my work, especially in my novel, A Separation, which is in a lot of ways a missing persons novel. So it's interesting to go back and see, you know, writing a book is interesting because in a lot of ways you don't know exactly what you've written and where it's come from until you've finished writing it and you start talking about it with other people.
Yeah, so much happens in, you know.
I think one of the things that I was interested in this novel was to think about whether or not it would be possible to create through structure and form some of the same tension that we generally associate with plot. So when you said that there's not a murder, but you feel like there could be a murder, I was hoping that I could use the structure of the novel to create momentum and tension. So even though nothing seems to be happening, the gap between the two halves, I hope, would create that kind of sense of dread and anxiety. And I hope that through that structure, I could create something that might even be considered a quote-unquote plot twist in a way. So, you know, I'm always thinking about what are the tools that are available to me as a writer. And of course, plot is a major tool that we can use, but so is structure. So I was interested to see if I could press structure into service to do some of the work that plot does. This novel is the kind of third in what I see as a little set of books that are all talking to each other that I've written, and they all feature unnamed female protagonists who have experienced varying degrees of passivity and agency in their lives. They're all women who speak the words of other people. In the first one I'm speaking of, A Separation, the central character is a translator. In the second one, Intimacy, is the central character is a simultaneous interpreter. And in this one, the central character is an actress who is interpreting parts, but again, performing parts that she's given to play by other people. And I'm also very much interested in this question of passivity, because I think there is a tendency in fiction, or certainly in the way we talk about fiction, to place a lot of emphasis on agency. And so I teach creative writing, and often in my workshops, a student will critique another writer's work by saying this character doesn't have any agency. And the implication is that a character without agency in some way is implausible or not compelling in narrative terms. But my sense is that the reality is that all of us live with a limited amount of agency, but we might live with the illusion that we have a great deal of agency. So I'm very much interested in characters who are actually aware of how little agency they actually have, who have passivity forced upon them, who perhaps even embrace their passivity to a certain extent, but eventually seek out locations where they can enact their agency. I think in our culture, we are encouraged to relate to story and narrative in a somewhat passive way. Even the vocabulary that people use, so binge watching, for example, this idea that you kind of gorge yourself on story in some way. But I actually think reading is one of the most profoundly interactive experiences that exists. I think it is one that is most rewarding when we are fully engaged, when we are doing a lot of interpretive work, when we are trying to understand possible meanings. And I think what I would like, or my hope would be, that people read the book and are willing to engage with it and see engagement as fundamental to reading. So there is not a kind of clear lesson in the book. It's a book that has a lot of ambiguity. It's a book that asks a reader to make choices and decisions about what they think it is. And I think what I hoped for was to create a reading experience where readers would feel like they had quite a lot of agency to make the book. I, of course, have lived between cultures, but I almost think of it in terms of not between, but more that I've lived much of my life in the United States, but I've not been only oriented towards American culture as an influence. So from a very young age, I was reading books from a lot of different places. And that's one of the wonderful benefits of growing up as children of immigrants, is that my parents did not have a sense of what the American or English literary canon was at all. They chose the books that interested them, and they gave me a lot of fiction and translation to read. And so the set of influences that I grew up with was quite widespread. And, you know, of course, I grew up between languages as well. I had a very, very powerful sense from a young age of how language plays a central role in shaping character. You know, I would see my parents, for example, they literally felt like different people depending on whether or not they were speaking English or Japanese. I saw how language was related to power, that if you spoke the primary language of the place where you were, you had more power and you earned more respect almost immediately. I saw the degree to which having an accent, for example, caused people to attribute so many narratives and identities to you. I saw that really firsthand. So those are all things that were very much in play in intimacies, and to a certain extent, though perhaps less directly, also in play in Audition. The central character is an Asian American actress. It's a very interesting time to think about Asian representation in film and movies and television in particular. For a period of her life, she was not given the parts that gave her the requisite material for her to make her work. She was given parts that felt thin, that felt like stereotypes, that often were quite literally speechless. At a certain point, she hits a cusp where something in the culture shifts, and then she is given these different parts to play, and that's where this novel falls. But I think this question of how language and how other people's perception both restricts and allows a certain kind of movement and articulation of identity is something that I'm very interested in. New York is kind of a scary place to write about because there is such a huge canon of books and books that are very important to me that are set in New York. Whether it's Henry James or it's Rosemary's Baby, there are just really powerful novels that have been set in this city. And so I think for a long time I hesitated to write something here, but at the same time, I've lived here for 15 years, and I think having written so many characters who were, as you say, physically displaced, characters who are literally arriving in a new location and trying to understand the world that they're seeing around them, people who feel a real gap between themselves and the world that they're inhabiting, I think in this novel, I felt that that gap was inside the character. It's a kind of schism, that sense of distance between two things was internal to the character rather than between the character and New York City itself. So in Intimacies, the character arrives in The Hague and she feels very displaced. She feels very much that she's not of this city. Similarly, in The Separation, the character goes to Greece and she's looking for her partner who she's separated from. And the landscape is bewildering to her in some way. In this novel, the landscape of New York City is not bewildering to the central character. It's where she's lived for very, very many years. It's actually the internal landscape that is in some way confounding her. So I think that's part of what allowed me to write something in this city where I've lived for quite a long time. I think I also realized that rather than thinking about it as writing against a canon or writing with the weight of the canon on me, I also thought, well, the canon of New York novels can actually lift you up in so many ways. You know, it is so deeply evocative. People have an image of New York. It's very powerful. You can lean on things like narratives of unease that you see in something like Invisible Man or Rosemary's Baby and kind of use that to create the texture and atmosphere of the world that I was trying to write. I like to quote an old professor of mine, Michael Wood, and he said that half of what I think I've experienced in real life, I've only read in a book. And so much of how I understand the world, not only understand the world, but directly experience it, is through reading. I strongly feel that reading is one of the most intimate acts that we can do. Every time I pick up a book, I'm opening up my mind to the mind of another person. It's an act of tremendous intimacy. It's an act of hope and of real faith and vulnerability. There's real communion in reading. I think when we are atomized, things really fall apart. Social structures lose their power. And so to me, reading is a way of connecting to other people in a very, very powerful way. There's nothing about reading that feels frivolous or unessential in any way. There's nothing about fiction that feels that it's not serving a purpose. I think it brings people together in community, and I think that's one of the most powerful things that art can do.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to these highlights. To listen to the latest episodes or learn more about participating in exhibitions or interviews, click on subscribe. Thank you for listening.